Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
From the UCD School of Education, Dr. Bergen, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm great, Philip. How are you?
Over the course of the next few weeks, you are going to be with us to answer scientific questions that we all might like to hear being debunked or some of our misconceptions set straight. This week, we have asked you to investigate commonly held ideas about the natural world and see whether they're right or wrong. We're going to start one that my grandmother always laid a big guilt trip on me about. And I'd be delighted to hear whether she was wrong about this, even though she's long gone. And that is, will a mother bird abandon her nest if we touch the nest or touch the eggs?
Well, with all of these things, there's always a grain of truth, isn't there? And that's what makes them interesting. Essentially, we think that by touching eggs or baby chicks, that we'll imprint our scent on them. That's what my grandmother would have told me. Stay away from the nest, because if you touch it, the parent will come back and get the smell of you and think, well, these aren't my chicks, I'm going to abandon it. That's not true at all, right? So birds have a very poor sense of smell, except for a few. And one interesting one is the starling, which can actually sniff out natural insecticides in plants and things. And so they take those and they line their own nests with them to keep them bug free. Isn't that incredible?
Really?
Yeah. The common starling, which is plaguing
that
our garden at the moment.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. But most other birds have poor senses of smell. So they won't know if you've touched the egg. They won't get the scent off it. But what they will know is that somebody's been rummaging around. And they'll think, oh, there might have been a predator here, something that's going to threaten my brood. And so depending on the bird, they'll have to do sort of like a cost-benefit analysis to determine whether they should up sticks, remove the young, abandon the thing completely, or should they stick it out?
What I have to interject here with, though, is regardless of what Mr. Science says, the law says, the Wildlife Act 1976 in this country says, do not go willfully disturbing or anywhere near nests, particularly those.
Yeah, because they'll think you're a predator. They'll think that, and I certainly wouldn't go near a nest, but they will think that something's been in here is probably going to try and eat my young. So animals that would, or birds that would spend a great deal of their lives rearing a single brood, say like a short-lived bird, like a robin or something like that, they really will hesitate to leave. But something big, where one brood isn't going to be a big proportion of their life, something like a bird of prey, they're much more skittish. They're far more likely to just up sticks and abandon the chick.
Now, I'm delighted that you have chosen to address this next one. Dock leaves helping with nettle stings. I have known intuitively since about the age of 7 or 8 that dock leaves are absolutely no use whatsoever. But yet I have perpetuated in my own mind this idea that it does work, because you hear so much of it. So much so I've passed it on to my own children and treated their nettle stings with dock leaves. It doesn't work though, does it?
No. But there's more to it, right? And when I told my 10-year-old nephew Owen this last week, the look of disbelief in his face, and my 70-year-old father, well, he's not 70 yet, almost, he completely disagrees with me, even though he's a scientist too and he knows it's not true. He says it's placebo, right? And he's probably right. So essentially, the nettle works by having these little barbs of glass on the underside of the leaf. And as you brush against them, you break the little pieces of glass. They're little hollow cylinders of glass, and that effectively stabs you and injects an acid, formic acid, into your skin, and also histamines. And so you react and you get those horrible bumps and they're sore. And so the myth is, or the story is that you search for the dock leaf, and that the dock leaf might have some properties. Perhaps it's alkaline to the base that's in the acid, or the acid that's in the nettle, and that they'll neutralize one another. That's not true. There's no basic property within the dock leaf. So it isn't an acid-base reaction. Neither is there an antihistamine in the dock leaf. But yet, perhaps it's the It's the searching for, it's the distraction of looking for the dock leaf that might give you some instant relief.
And it's the implicit message that mummy or daddy does actually care, as opposed to the message that they should be communicating, which is, look, just tough it out. You got a nettle sting. It's not the end of the world.
You must have grown up in the countryside.
I did.
What's this, the poem said, the regiment of spite behind the shed, right, to describe nettles. They're incredible, in fact, that they have evolved to do this. So that they've evolved to sting so things won't eat them. But they are really important because some things can eat them. Things like caterpillars, for example. You'll see at the end of the summer that nettle plants can be awash with caterpillars, which will eat them before, of course, they turn into butterflies.
Okay. Let's cling to that one, though, because let's face it, you have to do something for the little darling when they're stung. And nobody carries a tube of anti-san in their pockets.
No.
So tell the child to go and look for a dock leaf. It will distract them. OK, next big one. And this has been the source of an awful lot of political controversy. Will reintroducing wolves help with biodiversity?
Probably. Is the answer to this. That's probably the answer to most science questions, actually, is it's yes
but
or no.
No, what you guys tend to say is needs more research.
Yeah, exactly. Show me the money. So the last wolf in Ireland is said to have been killed in 1786 on the slopes of Mount Leinster. I'm reliably informed from my wife, who's in Wexford, that it was on the Tinahili side of Mount Leinster, so in Wexford. And this is 300 years after they were believed to have been wiped out in England and 100 years after their disappearance in Scotland. They are incredible creatures. They were, of course, pack creatures. We hunted with them, and that's how we eventually domesticated the dog. They're apex predators. So they basically do population control for all of the things below them in the food chain. And they would have eaten hooved animals and controlled numbers. But of course, we're terrified of them. You think of all the fables we were told as children, the big bad wolf is a common character. Getting into this, Eamon Ryan said in 2019, we kind of need them back because we need to control species like deer, and we should do that in a natural way as opposed to going out and just shooting them, etc. And there's probably some sense in what he was saying, because it's almost 30 years since the wolf was reintroduced to Yellowstone National Park in the United States. And they found that it completely transformed the biodiversity of that natural space for the better. Animals that had kind of roamed willy-nilly with no fear were like elk, were eating saplings of trees that couldn't then establish. And so there was this imbalance in the ecosystem. And so when they reintroduce wolves, they've seen almost 30 years on that has significantly contributed to an improved biodiversity, which is good for the animals and, of course, is good for human life around it.
OK, none of that takes account, though, obviously, of the tens of kilometres that these guys need to roam over, and the fact that our landscape has changed so much and so much more intensively stocked now than would have been the case then. So, yes, theoretically, they might help with biodiversity, but there'd be an awful lot more problems created along the way.
There would, and it's probably like not the most sensible animal to introduce first because of the media that it would generate. You could put sturgeon in the river, for example, as a far more sensible reintroduction of an apex predator. We have eagles that have been introduced on the West Coast very successfully, and that's going rather well too.
That said, now, I was filming just a couple of weeks ago in Catalonia, where there are large stretches of deserted forest for wolves to roam. They have come in from France into northern Spain. I was talking to a shepherd who has taken the simple precaution of a couple of Spanish mastiffs, big dogs, protect his flock of 300. And the government has also taken the sensible precaution of just putting a compensation scheme in place. So now wolves and livestock in a very different landscape to Ireland, very, very different, do exist, coexist more or less peacefully.
And it's important to say that as we look at the countryside in Ireland, very little of it is wild, or perhaps as it should be. Ireland was once covered with trees and would have been a far more temperate rainforest than what we observe as we drive through the countryside today.
How likely is it that a bat will get stuck in your hair?
Unlikely, and it probably stems from the fact that bats have poor eyesight. And so we think if they come near me, they're going to get tangled up in me. But bats don't really use their eyes to navigate. They use, of course, echolocation. So they emit very high frequency sounds, and that allows them to paint a picture of the world around them. They do this because they operate at night, so sight wouldn't be that good to them. And they use high frequency so that they can observe insects on the size of a mosquito. I have had some of my own doubts on this one because many years ago, I was very privileged to go on a holiday to the tropics. I was in Borneo and had to wear one of those head torches to get from one place to another in the jungle. And of course, all the little midgets and the flies and things came to my torch. Mm-hmm. And with them then came the bats. And so as these bats swooped near me, of course, I kept thinking, you know, I wonder, do they get caught in your hair? Because my goodness, they can come close to you without
hitting
you.
But they are incredibly agile.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they're the only flying mammal, and their capacity to twist and turn in the air in order to catch those tricky insects is absolutely remarkable.
I know, I had one very recently. I mean, it's all over before you even notice it because they're moving so quickly, but it came to within 6 inches of my face before it just turned right and boom, off in the other direction. It was never going
to hit me. Was
this
in Ireland?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have, of course, lots of them here in Ireland. Yeah,
it was a little pipistrelle. All right, quick final question. Would a penny dropped from the top of the Empire State Building kill someone if it fell on him?
And a classic.
Well, and my supplementary question will be, if you're going to say no, it won't, would you stand under a penny thrown from the top of the Empire State Building, Shane Bergen?
I would not. And when I've been on top of that building, I have thought about this. Essentially, it's untrue. But again, there is a grain of truth to this, because the penny, of course, being flat and being very light, about a gram.
Has air resistance.
Yeah, the huge amount of air resistance. So it won't build up the sufficient amount of momentum, right, which is gathered because of speed, mm-hmm. so that when it connects with you, it'll kill you. However, if you drop something heavier like a pen and it were to fall in the right direction, it could kill you. And of course, there are reasons that people wear hard hats on building sites, because if you drop something as light as a bolt from a great height, that's 50 grams, and it hits you on the head, it could knock you out.
This is fun. I'm looking forward to doing this every week now. Shane Bergen, thank you very much. We'll take a break ahead of the 11 o'clock news.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.